Hey, what is up, everybody? My name is MJ, and you are listening to the one and only MTGN Quarantine Podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGNQuarantine. It's a huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals, and Coach J-Ro for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGNQuarantine for more information. And you can pick up your very own MTGN Quarantine branded playmat over at Inked Gaming. That's I-N-K-E-D gaming.com. Got two really awesome versions, both the full color logo as well as the grayscale version. They both look amazing. You're going to want one for you and all of your friends. So again, that is Inked Gaming, I-N-K-E-D gaming.com. You can find my promo code in my link tree, which I will be posting on the episode description below. Every purchase helps support the channel and is greatly appreciated. Alright, so we are back with yet another CEDH Deck Tech with amazing members of the community. So, without having a nice flowery intro or anything, I'm just going to get to the meat of the episode. So, I'd like to introduce a new guest today. That is Sam, the host and creator of the Howling Salt Mine podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, MJ. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. I think that we've been trying to work on this for some time, so it's definitely good to have you on.
Yeah, our schedules, it's hard to get things booked.
Sure is. Yeah. You know, from one podcast host to another, I think we kind of all know the scheduling dance. I mean, people say March Madness is madness, you know, for college basketball. But sometimes I think this and trying to schedule D&D sessions are actually far madder than any college basketball game.
Oh, my God. Yeah. D&D. That's like a whole nother animal.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we're almost like a distant second cousin to the D&D thing. But, you know, that's just me. I never really got into D&D too much, but I never had a good group. So I think that was part of it, too. But anyway, yeah, we're not here to talk about D&D, unfortunately. That'd be definitely another episode for another day. We are here to talk about CEDH. And that's probably the reason why you're listening to this episode. If you're not here for CEDH, I don't know what to say, but stick around, please. Anyway, yeah, so Sam, you would like to talk about your Marrath, Will of the Wild deck today. Sounds really exciting. Nice Naya creature here. And yeah, so how this is going to work is we're going to first walk through the synergy, what this deck is trying to do. Tell the folks out there, you know, this is my Marrath deck. This is what it's looking to do. Second thing we're going to do is we're going to look at how this deck wins. Obviously, we're playing CDH. We're trying to win as fast as efficiently as possible. We want to know how this 0/0 elemental beast is going to win us the game. Third thing we're going to do is we're going to kind of talk through some of the spicy includes that are in this list that maybe you didn't touch on at the very beginning, but you really want to talk about because they're awesome and you just really love to see them. And then we're going to just kind of wrap up with the usual why you should play Marrath. Sort of elevator speech there to get the folks out there listening really inspired to give this deck a try. So we're going to get started with that first question here, Sam. So how exactly does this Naya Beast deck work?
Yeah, so this is, I think even before that, I should mention the original brewer of this list. So I want to shout out Kuma the Bear. Kuma is a CDH brewer. He developed this Marrath Will of the Wild deck. And what I'm running is sort of a variation on a variation of it. And the original list is called Marrath Holy Trinity Stacks. And just want to read Marrath really quickly for everybody out there so you know exactly what it does. It's 3 mana, 1 of each color for Naya. It's a 0/0 legendary creature elemental beast. And it says, Marrath Will of the Wild enters the battlefield with a number of +1/+1 counters on it equal to the amount of mana spent to cast it. So it's one of those creatures that as your commander tax increases, it's coming in as a bigger and bigger creature with more +1/+1 counters on it. The real meat of it, and really the crux of the deck, comes with this activated ability. Pay X mana and remove X +1/+1 counters from Marrath. And then you choose one of these options. Put X +1/+1 counters on target creature, or Marrath deals X damage to target creature or player. That has been errated to any target. Or put an XX green elemental creature token on the battlefield. So mana goes in, tokens come off, or counters come off, and you get an effect, basically. So what this deck is this is sort of a mid-range stacks deck. We're looking to stall out the board game, or stall out the board in the early game with some quick stacks pieces, and hopefully assemble a combo or assemble sort of a harder stacks lock. Differs from most of your stacks decks in that it's a little bit more reactive, and you can really control the board. And a big part of this deck is about resource denial, and messing with your opponent's resources.
All right, so yeah, now that we have that nice little base here, a base foundation in how this deck works, how exactly would you say this deck wins? You did mention a lock, but how exactly does that lock work?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. So again, just going back to the creator Kuma, Kuma the Bear, when he was developing this deck, he wanted to have a Holy Trinity of stacks pieces, it was called. And really the intent was to be running Cursed Totem effects, Blood Moon, and Collector Ufer Null Rod effects. So Cursed Totem, you're shutting down creatures' activated abilities. Blood Moon, you're messing with mana production. And Null Rod Collector Oof, you're shutting down artifact activated abilities. Now, in the current incarnation of the deck, you know, Blood Moon these days isn't quite as useful. There's a lot more monocolored decks out there. And Blood Moon gives you red mana, which is great for casting Dockside, and then you just have your treasure and you're fine. So it's not really like the greatest card anymore when you're trying to do this kind of lock. The other thing you'll notice is that Cursed Totem shuts down creature artifact, or shuts down creature activated abilities. And with Marath, we want to be using activated abilities. So this deck sort of pivots and runs some kind of interesting lock cards. And the lock is really a Null Rod effect, either Collector Oof, Null Rod, or Stony Silence to shut down activated abilities of artifacts. The second piece is Linvala, Keeper of Silence. Mm-hmm. This is an asymmetrical stacks piece. It's 4 mana, a 2 colorless and 2 white, a legendary creature angel, 3/4 flyer, and it says activated abilities of creatures your opponents control can't be activated. So, of course, as a stacks player, we love our asymmetrical effects. And then the last piece to the Holy Trinity here is Living Plane. So this is a enchant world. It is 2 colorless and 2 green, and it says, it essentially says all land become 1/1 creatures. Mm-hmm. The old text says, treat all land in play as both lands and 1/1 creatures. They may not be tapped for mana the first turn they are brought into play. So when you have Living Plane out, now Linvala turns all of your opponent's lands off as well. So it's really trying to constrict their mana sources. So lands aren't working, orcs aren't working, and rocks aren't working. And from there, you have a pretty good hold on the table. And my dorks still work because Linvala is asymmetrical. My lands still work. And then from there, you can kind of leverage that advantage.
Okay, so are you looking to just force people to concede the game, or are you trying to then just beat them over the face in the only way Naya really knows how?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there are a couple ways, other ways to win. I mean, truthfully, the Holy Trinity lock is kind of like the pie in the sky goal for the deck. The real way of winning, and you know, this is a deck that runs like Rule of Law stacks and kind of your typical Naya stacks pieces in here. I can get into that a little bit more in a bit, but we do have a couple other win cons. Of course, if for some reason you don't have out your Collector Oof, your Stony Silence, or your Null Rod, you can combo off with Emile the Blessed and Dockside Extortionist.
Okay.
I think most people know what that combo does. Dockside's obviously coming
might in. Might as well walk folks through there, because I know that we've talked about Dockside in multiple deck lists before, but I don't think this combo itself. So probably best to walk through it real quick.
Yeah, so Emile the Blessed is a legendary unicorn. It costs 2 generic mana and 2 white mana. It's a 4/4. And it has this awesome activated ability that is 3 generic mana, exile another target creature you control, then return to the battlefield under its owner's control. So it's really just bouncing creatures out and back into play. With your Dockside, when that comes in, you count the number of artifacts and enchantments your opponents control, and you get that many treasures. So as long as you are getting 4 or more treasures, you start to go mana positive and can just do this infinitely to get infinite treasures, infinite mana. So the other benefit of Marath, you'll recall that I mentioned that activated ability,
mm-hmm.
you are Generally speaking, the transactions for Marath's activate ability are in increments of one. Almost never want to do any more than that. So pay one, remove one counter, deal one damage. And that's a great way to just completely machine gun down the board, killing Marath off, recasting Marath with your infinite mana, and doing infinite damage to your opponents for the win.
Mm-hmm.
There is another combo here as well. So Emil and Dockside, of course, you know, I'm mentioning that we're playing a lot of Collector Oof effects and trying to shut down artifacts. Dockside just being so powerful that we still run it anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But the other combo is a really fun one. And this is a creature-based combo. It can win through Rule of Law very easily, just like that other one can. Emil and Dockside, you know, you can assemble it slowly and win when you have Rule of Law out. Casting over and over again with Marath can be challenging, but I actually try to focus on only running creature Rule of Law effects so I can shoot down my own creatures if I have to unlock the board a little bit. So this other combo is Conclave Mentor and Cryptic Trilobite. So first I'll read Conclave Mentor. It's kind of the more boring of the two. It is one green and one white. It's a 2/2 creature, centaur, cleric. And it says if one or more plus one counters would be put on a creature you control, that many plus one counters are put on that creature instead. It's essentially a hardened scales effect, just increasing counters that get put on things. The beauty of that is with Marath, you can actually take a counter, pay one mana, take a counter off of Marath, and put a counter back on Marath. You can target itself. And when you have one of these doubling effects out, or one of these like incremental increasers with your plus one counters, you can basically pay one mana and do that loop and increase the number of plus one counters on Marath, slowly growing her in size. So where Cryptic Trilobite comes in, Cryptic Trilobite is, this is from Ikoria, and it's one of the few colorless creatures that isn't an artifact and isn't an Eldrazi. It's just kind of like in a weird space. It's a 0/0, it costs XX, and it says it enters the battlefield with X plus one counters on it. It has two activated abilities. The first one is the most important. It says remove a plus one counter from Cryptic Trilobite and add two colorless mana to your mana pool. Spend this only to activate abilities. The other one is you pay one and tap it and you can put a plus one counter on it. So the way that this combo works is, you know, this deck is a little bit like a Rube Goldberg machine with triggering through Marath, incrementing things a little bit here, making a little bit of mana, and slowly building up through these infinite combos. So if you take a plus one counter off of Marath and put one on your Cryptic Trilobite, well, Conclave Mentor says now you put two. You've got two on your Cryptic Trilobite, you take those two off, and now you have four mana that you can charge back into Marath. You can use one of those to increase Marath again to reset it back to that original value and continue the loop from there. And what this does, it nets you infinite colorless mana and a Marath that is infinitely tall. So infinite plus one counters on it. And then from there, you can just churn through and machine gun down the board. And where that Emil Dockside combo required a recasting of Marath, you know, that can be hosed by a number of things. Someone else's Rule of Law, for instance, a Adranith Magistrate, for instance. Cryptic Trilobite and Conclave Mentor, Marath never leaves the battlefield. It's just, you're just cycling through these activated abilities and shooting down the board.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really compact win con, and it's just creature based, and it kind of skirts through all of the stacks pieces that we play as well. So that is generally how this deck wins.
All right. Yeah, that's very interesting to learn about. Cryptic Trilobite, I'm actually familiar with because it's in my Godo list. So a nice little way to be able to give yourself a little boost of mana later on, especially if you end up dropping the Trilobite on like turn two, let's say, or turn one, then you can tap it, add a counter. All of a sudden, now you have most of the helm mana right there. So yes, I'm very familiar with that, but that's a very interesting synergy right there. I guess I didn't see that on the outset, but again, that's the reason why I'm not the one presenting these deck techs. I'm not a very good CDH player, so there we go. I admit it. Anyway, yeah, so
no,
that's...
me neither.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah, now that we've walked through the win cons here, Sam, what are some of the other really cool synergies or just like spicy pieces that are in this list that just really make the deck work or help you protect your combo?
Yeah, I would love to talk about that. So, like I mentioned, this is a standard Naya stacks deck. So we're running some Rule of Law stacks pieces, things like Deafening Silence, Eidolon of Rhetoric, Archon of Emeria. I'm actually not running the full Rule of Law right now, just because I haven't liked it in practice. I like to have those creatures out. You got your Aven Mind Censor, your Archon of Valor's Reach, Dranith. Of course, I mentioned Stony Silence, Collector Oof, Linvala, Living Plane, that all fun stuff. And then Root Maze as well. Root Maze is just a really fantastic stacks piece. Comes down on turn one, and generally because we aren't playing artifacts, we can play through it a little bit easier than everybody else. A couple spicy cards in here. I do want to shout out Unbound Flourishing, which is sort of another piece to that win con. If you don't have Conclave Mentor, you can pull it off with Unbound Flourishing. People who have like a Zaxara deck might know this card. It is an enchantment for two and a green. And it says, whenever you cast a permanent spell with a mana cost that contains X, double the value of X. So we don't care about that in this deck, but it's the second effect that we do. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell or activate an ability, if that spell's mana cost or that ability's activation cost contains X, copy that spell or ability. You may choose new targets for the copy. So this not only is technically a token doubler, a counter doubler. Well, heck, it's a token doubler too, because Marath can make tokens. So this doubles those +1/+1 counters, so it'll fill in for Conclave Mentor with that Cryptic Trilobite combo. The other thing that it does is it turns all of Marath's single damage pings into two damage pings, or a second instance of a single damage ping. So one of the great things that Marath is really good at is killing mana dorks. And that's sort of what I was talking about with that resource denial and resource management aspect of this deck. So one of the ways that you really want to play this deck is to get your Marath out quickly, and generally you do want to hold up mana between turns, even just one or two, to have a couple damage to be able to throw out at people. That allows you to be pretty flexible as you play. Another thing that Marath can do is it can make those elemental tokens, and of course that's going to get doubled as well with Unbound Flourishing. So you can, you know, make 2 1/1 elemental tokens, and now your Gaia's Cradle is going off for 2 more mana. So you can sort of like double up on your investment in that way. And there's even just some regular turn-over-turn value that you can pop out if you'd like. The other thing that Unbound Flourishing does, which is fewer and far between, but it's cool when it happens, is it copies your Court of Calling, Green Sun Zenith, and Finale of Devastation casts, because those are instants and sorceries with an X in the cost. So there is a world where you can kind of double up on those and get two creatures out from your deck. So that can be a lot of fun and a lot of value. Another really interesting card. Oh, go ahead.
No, I mean, I was actually just about to ask you whether you were going to use all three modes of Marath, but you just answered my question, so we're all good.
Yeah, Marath, you actually do generally use all three modes. So the +1/+1 counter aspect, that one's a little bit more niche, but it can have a ton of value. Let's say you pump up your Ragavan. You know, an early Ragavan is great in CDH, but once those blockers start to build up, it kind of loses its value. But if you have a 3-2 Ragavan or a 4-3 Ragavan, now it's eating through your opponents a little bit more, eating through those blockers, getting you your treasure token and that card off the top of your opponent's library. So that can be really, really valuable. Like I mentioned, the Gaia's Cradle aspect as well is just great to make those tokens, add your Gaia's Cradle count, and keep things going. Another really interesting card in here that I've run is Earthcraft. I think a lot of people know what Earthcraft does, but it's an enchantment for 1 and a green. You can tap an untapped creature you control and untap target basic land. Now, admittedly, we're not running a ton of basic lands in this deck. You know, we do have ways to tutor those from the library if you're really in dire straits and you want to pop off in this way. But if you have a basic land that's enchanted with, say, Wild Growth or Utopia Sprawl or something along those lines, you can actually get a pretty good engine going by making an elemental token, tapping that, untapping your enchanted land, making 2 mana, and kind of get a bit of an engine going there. There are some sort of stranger combo lines with like Earthcraft and Enchanted Land and Unbound Flourishing and different things like that, where you're making two tokens, using it to untap that land twice, and kind of popping off from there. That's not really the plan we have, but it is cool when it happens. The other thing that Earthcraft does is, if you do have Living Plane out, of course all of your lands are 1/1 creatures. So Earthcraft can help you if you already have a basic that's out earlier. Earthcraft can help you still get value from those lands, because your creature that you tap for Earthcraft doesn't need to have haste or anything like that. So you can still squeeze out a little bit of value there too. So the other thing I want to talk about, a little bit more on Living Plane. So Living Plane, you know, just sort of talked about some stuff with Earthcraft. One of the really cool things with Living Plane is having your opponent's creatures be a 1/1 is just extremely disruptive. Their lands are coming in and they have Summoning Sickness. Fetch lands start to become really terrible because they need two full turn cycles to be even usable at all. And Marath, of course, can ping your opponent's lands. And sometimes an early Marath and an early Living Plane is enough to completely choke out your opponents off of a specific color in their deck. And to add to that, add to this sort of synergy that we have, shooting dorks, shooting lands, things like that, we do have some other cards in here that are pretty interesting. I run Goblin Sharpshooter in this deck. I'm really, really high on this card. I love it. It's a little bit janky, you know, it needs a turn cycle before it pops off because it doesn't have haste, but it is just a mana dork killer. It is fantastic. For a while, I actually ran the Splinter Twin combo with Goblin Sharpshooter, so it was an additional win con in the deck, but it just never really popped off for me, so I ended up taking that out. For those who don't know it, Goblin Sharpshooter is a 1/1, 2 generic and 1 red for a goblin. It doesn't untap during your untap step, but whenever a creature dies, you do untap it. And you can tap it to deal 1 damage to any target. So between Goblin Sharpshooter and Marath, you can really lay out some damage into dorks. You know, your opponent stacks pieces and hates bears. Their Timnas are going to be dying pretty quickly. So you can kind of team up with two ways to shoot down your opponent's creatures. To add to that, we also run Nightshade Peddler. Which is kind of a weird card. 2 mana, it's 1 and a green for a 1/1 human druid with soul bond. And as long as Nightshade Peddler is paired with another creature, both creatures have death touch. So this is pretty banging with Marath. I mean, you can give Marath death touch and just shoot creatures out very easily. Shoot out Kroms, shoot out Dranith Magistrate if somehow Marath is out there and you need to open up your Emil win con. You can shoot out your own creature stacks pieces that might be locking you and preventing you from winning. So that is just really good. You can also pair it with Goblin Sharpshooter as well to really just nuke the board. And Goblin Sharpshooter with Living Plane, if all of your opponent's lands are 1/1s, Goblin Sharpshooter is going to eat every single one, because as soon as one land dies, it's untapping and it's going to kill the next one. So it's pretty much like an asymmetrical land wipe at that point. And then some other sources to get death touch. We have Orin Frostfang, fantastic card. Attacking creatures you control have death touch. So you can move to attacks, and then while you are, you know, before damage and things like that, even before blockers are declared, you can do some of these shenanigans at instant speed, start killing things, untapping your Goblin Sharpshooter, tapping it again to kill other stuff. And then Sarath the Viper's Fang as well. This is just another way to get death touch. It also gives your tapped creatures death touch, your untapped creatures hexproof. So it's a protection piece, and it is also a way to, you know, shoot down opponents' resources and kind of frustrate them. The last thing I'll mention with Living Plane is kind of going back to that Orin Frostfang piece. Orin Frostfang, whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to an opponent, you can draw a card. And we also run Toski in this deck as well. Toski, Bearer of Secrets. It's an indestructible, can't be countered. It's from Kaldheim, and essentially a similar effect to Orin Frostfang. With Living Plane, all of your lands are now attackers. So it's very feasible to overwhelm opponents that have weak board states and draw like 5 or 6 cards. You know, if you don't need to be casting anything that turn and you're really digging for an answer, you can get there with your Awakened Lands. You can also get there with Marath's Elemental tokens to make more like weenies to attack in. So those two cards can give you a ton of value.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Toski is great. Just being able to draw cards for hitting your opponents, doing the thing that you probably going to be doing anyways, is always real nice.
Yeah, it's just a fantastic return. I mean, they are expensive. You know, one of the things about this deck is that it's a little bit fat around the 4 and 5 mana cost. I've trimmed it down a little bit and, you know, put in slightly faster mana, like Simeon Spirit Guide and some stuff like that, just to try to get things out a little bit earlier. But we're pretty much mainly on rock, or mainly on dorks. We only have 4 rocks in the deck, and often they are turned off. So this deck does suffer from being a little bit slow, which is why we go on that mid-range stacks plan. Last spicy card I want to mention is Academy Rector. Academy Rector is just a gorgeous card, and it's a real shame that it doesn't see enough play. Academy Rector is a 4-mana, 1/2 human cleric. It's 3 generic and 1 white. And it's very simple. It says, when Academy Rector dies, you may exile it. If you do, search your library for an enchantment card and put that card onto the battlefield, and then shuffle. So the ideal application of Academy Rector is as an Eldritch Evolution target. If you hit your Academy Rector with Eldritch Evolution, you can tutor out a creature from your library with mana cost up to 2 more than Academy Rector. And you also get that death trigger from Academy Rector. So that's really like a 1-2 punch to get Linvala and Living Plane on the battlefield at once. You are Eldritch Evolutioning for the Linvala Keeper of Silence, and with the Academy Rector trigger, you're getting your Living Plane out. If for some reason you don't, you know, you're not living in Magical Christmas Land and you can't get the Eldritch Evolution going, you can shoot your Academy Rector down with Marath and just pull out your Living Plane from your library, potentially your Unbound Flourishing, if that's like the piece of the combo that you need. I used to get Splinter Twin back when I was running that Splinter Twin Goblin Sharpshooter combo. So it's got a few applications on like what you need to tutor out and what you need to tutor out right now. Because of that, it's a really versatile piece in here. I mean, you can even get like Destiny Spinner if you're in a pinch and you need something to be uncounterable. So it's a sort of a strange piece in here and really just trying to get a couple things. But when it works, it's just fantastic.
Definitely. I mean, there's just so many spicy things you can do here, especially with a card that I probably come across this Living Plane, but I've probably forgotten about it. So the fact that it's such an important piece to this deck is really cool. And then also the fact you have Earthcraft in there, which is really nice. So you have 2 very old enchantments, which are just doing an absolute crap ton of work in this deck.
Yeah, I mean, it's a ton of fun to play. You know, one of the things with Living Plane is that it can just be so disruptive. Even just pinging out 1 or 2 lands from an opponent can fully lock them out, almost better than what could be achieved with a Blood Moon. You know, I mean, how often do we have an opponent on a 3 or 4 color deck that just needs that 1 color, and they finally play their command tower and you just shoot it before it does anything? I mean, that feels really good as a Stax player.
Yeah, because again, when you're playing Stax and CDH, you have to go for any advantage you can get.
Exactly. So, you know, other than that, I mean, this deck does run kind of your typical tutor package, your typical removal package. There's a couple spicier things in there. We do run Shared Summonance, which is, you know, some people call that the some people call it the green ad nauseum, which is kind of silly. It's 5 mana, instant, 3 generic and 2 green, and you search your library for 2 different creature cards and put them in your hand. Though it's not like the most overpowered thing, but where we have multiple combo lines that each just need 2 creatures, it's very reasonable to tutor that up and drop it in. You know, if you've got a Destiny Spinner on board, your creatures aren't going to be counterable, so there's some protection there as well. You know, you get your classics like Ranger Captain of Eos, Grand Abolisher, Silence, Allosaurus Shepherd, so all of our green tutors are popping off when we need it. I do run Lightning Bolt in this deck, and the reason I mention that is because there is technically a loop here. This is sort of your desperation loop, where if you have Emile, Lightning Bolt, and Eternal Witness, and somehow have infinite mana, but you can't cast Marath out, maybe there's a you know, something on board that you just mm-hmm. can't remove it. You can technically lightning bolt the board down with that combo, but it's mostly in there for the memes, and lightning bolt is just fantastic removal these days, especially, you know, when you're facing down a Adranith.
Mm-hmm. Or honestly, it's just nice to be able to try to kill the Nahz player too, which you never know. It's always nice definitely. To have that.
And I mean, 3 damage and then Marath does another 1 or 2, you know, you can take out your Winota, you can take out a Krom. So it does have some of these applications where you can make it pretty dangerous. I mean, this deck has the potential to really like eat other stacks decks with that Death Touch and with that removal. Winota, for example, obviously super creature heavy, snowballing, bring out all these creatures. A Goblin Sharpshooter with Death Touch is just going to eat that entire board. So it does have some of these like plays where it really can be anti-meta, which is sort of where the deck developed from originally, was as this sort of anti-meta deck to come in, disrupt things, be really annoying. It's fantastic at killing opponents' commanders that have 2 toughness or 1 toughness. Like I actually originally built this deck because my co-host Mike played a Magda deck and was just like running the board. So I was like, fine, I'm going to rebuild this Marath deck. And, you know, Magda has 1 toughness, so it was very easy to just pop Magda every single time she came down and just keep him under control. So in a situation like that, I mean, the deck has a ton of power that it can bring to the table.
Yeah, for sure. So I think you've actually made a really good case as to why the folks out there should give Marath a try. But if you haven't convinced them, Sam, I think now would be a good time to give them the elevator pitch of why they should look into this deck.
If you want to play Marath, I mean, this is a kind of deck that if you like stacks, you enjoy building a puzzle for your opponents, you like that resource denial style of play, and you also kind of like to be the sheriff at the table stopping people, this deck does have a surprising amount of control and stopping power for just being a Naya stacks deck. So if that kind of stuff interests you, if you want to run janky cards like Living Plane and try to make them good, I mean, this is definitely the deck for you. I should mention that we have a fantastic Discord community. The original brewer, Kuma the Bear, is the admin there. I'm one of the moderators there. We've got a bunch of other awesome people in there. And there's some other really spicy brews for Marath. Fervent Alchemist, Kai, he's on there, and he's built this Marath Zoo deck, which gets away from the stacks and it's a little bit more aggressive. So there are different ways to build it. It's an infinite mana outlet in your command zone, and you can have these really awesome low to the ground activated ability combos that just absolutely pop off. So if that stuff interests you, check out the deck. You know, it's a ton of fun to play.
For sure, for sure. Anyways, Sam, thank you so much for taking the time to guest today and walk everybody through this really cool Naya stacks deck.
Yeah, thanks for having me, MJ. This was a ton of fun.
Yeah, no problem. And I know I forgot at the beginning of the episode, so I apologize. But again, before you leave today, you need to give a huge shout out to your podcast.
I would love to. Yeah, so I host the Howling Saltmine podcast with my 2 friends, Mike and Tony. And basically what we do every week, we have an episode come out. And I think we all have a story like this. We all have a story where someone got really salty at a table. They were being really grumpy, they were whining, they were getting angry. Maybe you did something that really bugged them, or they were doing something that was making you feel salty. So we get these stories, we get them from listeners, we get them from people in the community. We find them on Reddit a lot of the time, and we take them and we read them on the show and kind of joke about them and then talk about playgroup dynamics. So, you know, we've been a podcast for, gosh, I think it's been almost 6 months now. And it's just been a ton of fun. New episodes coming out every Thursday. We got a Patreon if anyone's interested in getting some like additional content. We do extra episodes every month. And it's just a great time. You can find us on Spotify, Instagram, Twitter, The Howling Saltmine.
All right, sounds good. I think I have more than a few stories I could shoot your way at some point.
Oh, dude, please. And if anyone out there, if you think you have one, like send them to us. We love to read them. And love to read them on the show even more. It's just so entertaining.
Yeah. Do you guys also have an email for these submissions, or is it best to send you those via Twitter or some other outlet?
Yeah, Twitter is fine. We're Howling Saltmine on Twitter, but our Gmail is thehowlingsaltmine@gmail.com. You can email us there, and we always ask people to keep their stories short, sweet, and to the salt.
All right. Yeah, sounds good. And if you're interested in hearing any of the previous CDH deck techs I have done on this channel, or just any of the CDH content, or just, honestly, any episode I've done on the MTG and Quarantine podcast, you can find those on the usual podcast outlets. That is your Googles, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rocketcast, Podcast, Overcast, Breaker, Magic FM, and a million others. I honestly don't remember all of them. There's so many out there. But if it's a major podcast outlet, you can probably find my stuff on there. You can also find me on the Bird Site Twitter at MTG in Quarantine. I'd like to utilize the opportunity again to give another huge shout out and thank you to the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. So huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals, and Coach J-Rove for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name is MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.